This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanizan and Noel Lim. It's 7:06 a.m. Thursday, the 6th of May, and in about 15 minutes, we're going to be discussing the implications of MCO 3.0 on the domestic travel and tourism industry with Nigel Wong of Mata. But before that, we are taking a look at the markets.
Looking at the US markets, the Dow was up 0.3%, S&P 500 up 0.1%, and the Nasdaq was down 0.4%.
Over in Asia, the Nikkei and the Japan and Korea were closed for Children's Day. Hang Seng was down 0.5%. Shanghai Composite was down 0.8%. The Singapore STI was down 0.8% as well. And so was the FBM KLCI. A seemingly synchronized downturn there. But just to note, if you think you've heard the Nikkei being closed again this week, yes, it has. It's been closed for 3 days in a row. On Monday for Constitution Day. Tuesday for Green New Day,
yes.
And yesterday for Children's Day.
I'm just looking forward to Mountain Day in August. So this morning, for some insight into what's going to be happening with global markets, we are speaking with Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, thanks so much for joining us today. Now, Janet Yellen's comments on higher rates have roiled financial markets. Isn't this going against the Fed's view, though? What are your thoughts?
Good morning, everyone. So I just wanted to start off by saying that Janet Yellen, I think in no way started the fire, so to speak. She just gently kindled the embers. And in her defense, she was not very clear about what rates were. And we have already seen 10-year yields going up. So she partly only articulated what has already happened. But yes, I mean, she did suggest that, you know, there might be a rates adjustment in the horizon, though she did refrain from marking that horizon. At the end of the day, it appears that she merely expressed what's on the mind of markets, because markets for a while now have been discounting the Fed's dot plot that suggests no rate hikes through 2023, and you know, gradually bringing it forward as the inflation evidence comes in.
So how seriously should we take her comments?
I think we should not be overly worked up on her comments. We really want to be watching the right pond here, which is the Fed and the Fed speak. So my concern would be how many people in the Fed, the consensus right now is too early to speak of taper or rate hikes, and they need to see a string of data that confirm a full recovery and maximum employment, not just full employment. So that's where they're coming from. And we've only had Robert Kaplan, just one person, standing out saying that, you know, taper should be started earlier, whereas the rest have not. And I think so that's really what we need to pay attention to. Whereas Janet Yellen's other point is that fiscal stimulus will not cause permanent inflation either. So I don't think we need to take her point on rates too seriously. Her broader point is that this is not going to be lastingly inflationary, not in a sense that policy needs to be mindful of and exercise restraint as such.
Over in the UK, Vishnu, at the Bank of England policymakers meet today. Do you expect that they will indicate easing off on stimulus as the economy recovers?
And that's a very good question, Roshan. I mean, we've already seen Bank of Canada starting their version of taper. And what makes the UK stand out is they're quite ahead in vaccinations. And not only is this year's growth set to be strong, the forecast suggests that next year's growth is also is poised to be very strong. So if you put two and two together and price pressures are coming in, Bank of England may need to start considering this soon. But our sense is that they won't move just yet, apart from the fact that you might just have a Scottish referendum coming in later today. I think the Bank of England, not unlike the Fed, although the details may differ, and the extent may differ, they also want to watch for continued data evidence suggesting strength and in a broad-based manner. So we don't think they'll move today.
And meanwhile, Vishnu, as much as central bankers are playing down the rise of inflation, the price increase of most commodities cannot be denied, as soybean, palm oil, even metals like copper have hit new highs. How long can this be ignored by markets? Or would you attribute price increases mainly to weather conditions?
We all know the state of dress of the emperor right now. And we can't ignore that really. And the bigger question here is twofold. One is whether this, after this initial pickup in prices, which has been really exacerbated by all the supply chain kinks, including logistics, so just the cost of moving it has also gone up. So once we look past that, the real question is twofold. One is, A, does this turn out to be transitory or not? We all know it's here, and it's going to be here for a while. So that's the first question. The second question is, does the demand pool then catch up? So do you get wage increments and top-line increments? Because otherwise, this may ironically turn out to be deflationary in so far that it really squeezes out disposable income and profit margin. So that is the part that we can't agree on, because that goes back to the multipliers involved in the economy. And we haven't really seen this movie before, not this way, not this cut.
Well, on the economy, what news and data might contribute to a sell in May and go away? For example, might we see a smaller stimulus in the US?
our point is there's every reason to sell in May. We've got rich valuations, but we may not go away, because one of the things that caused sell in May and go away was the summer holidays that traders took. Even that impact was diminishing over the years. And in particular this year, because we've got so much hanging, things like what the price developments are, whether Biden gets to push through his fiscal stimulus in the form that he wants, and so many other issues, including the vaccination rates and the virus mutations, that I don't think traders are inclined to leave their desk. And there's also the fear of missing out, which means that they don't want to just close off and lock in profits and be off the desks either. And I think that may really make the sell in May and go away impact either very twitchy rather small. So I think it's really going to be a headline-driven market this May.
Moving on to India, Vishnu, the pandemic surge is causing economic ripples beyond its borders. Which ASEAN countries are most vulnerable in terms of economic exposure to India?
I think if we look purely in terms of the size of trade, then we've got countries like Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam in that order, followed by Thailand. But if we adjust for the relative size of the economy in all this mathematical gymnastics we want to do, Singapore, Malaysia come up quite a bit on top in terms of exposure. But I think that misses the broader point. The broader point is India is not just about goods trade. There's a huge amount of services and people involved moving around. So the impact is going to be far and wide, whether it's through supply chain or just in the broader sense, the contagion impact. And I think the overarching point here is that until everyone is safe, no one is safe, because anywhere where you have ripples and a very bad outbreak, there are chances of a far worse mutations, which we all then remain vulnerable to.
And Vishnu, so Singapore's April PMI recorded its highest reading since December of 2018. Are tighter movement restrictions in any way set to impact their May manufacturing number?
For now, touch wood, it would not be that case, because I think despite the slightly tighter restrictions, they are more nuanced now. And while we may get a little bit of a restraint in activity, it's not going to completely clamp it down either. Whereas I think the bigger point is whether that kind of pickup in activity can be maintained once we strip out the price effects. So that remains to be seen on a broad-based basis outside of the chips and semiconductor sector.
Vishnu, thanks so much for joining us this morning. That was Vishnu Bharathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us some insight into what's happening in international markets and then particularly here in this region. But we also have some interesting news that has caught our eye this morning, some earnings news. PayPal reported stronger than expected first quarter earnings this morning. Their net profit for their first quarter rose to just over $1 billion US from $84 million a year earlier, and other indicators also came in higher than analysts projected.
I had to read that number a few times, right? Just to reiterate, that's $1.1 billion from $84 million.
I know, it's like a really big jump.
So it must have been a really bad year last year, this time last year, because that's 10 times and no one's batting an eye. I actually looked up a few other articles, so I presume
this piece of news is correct.
Correct.
Did they drop a zero? 840 million ringgit.
EPS was 122 US dollars a share versus the 101 expected. Revenue was $6 billion versus the 5.9 expected. And total payments volume was around $285 billion versus the $265 billion. So they beat on all those three metrics. And in fact, added 14.5 million new net active accounts. They've got a total user base now of 392 million users.
Yeah, so PayPal also gave guidance for the second quarter and full year. For the full year, they are expecting revenue to grow 20% to about 25 billion US dollars. And meanwhile, Uber first quarter results beat estimates and dramatically improved its net losses, but missed on revenue. And here's how Uber did versus expectations. I think it made a loss of 6 cents per share compared to 54 cents expected by analysts.
So revenue fell short at 2.9 billion US dollars. Analysts had been expecting somewhere more along the lines of 3.3 billion. First quarter results showed otherwise strong growth, though, of 24% in gross bookings driven by the delivery business. Now, delivery was up 166% on year to $12.5 billion. Unsurprising considering how many people were no doubt stuck at home and ordering their food in for themselves. Now, total value of customer spending on Uber reached $19.5 billion. That exceeded analysts' expectations. Overall, Uber's net loss came in at $108 million, which is, if you think about it, a tremendous improvement from the $968 million that they lost in the fourth quarter of 2020.
That number is the reverse of PayPal, right? They went from $84 million to a billion. Here, it's like they went from $1 billion in net loss to $100 million. So, okay, a good improvement, but what to note there also is not entirely from operating operating profit, right? Because that was largely due to a $1.6 billion gain from the sale of its self-driving unit ATG. Otherwise, Uber's operating profit was still quite high for
operating
the quarter.
Operating loss, you mean?
Operating loss, sorry. it was more than $1.5 billion on that front. It reaffirmed its expectations to reach profitability on an adjusted EBITDA basis by the end of this year. This is something that a lot of investors have been paying attention to, because after Travis left, Dara Khosrowshahi was really tasked with this charge, right, to get Uber to a profitable position and essentially help the company mature into a quote unquote adult corporation. Let's see whether they hit this by the end of the year. However, it said also that spending on recruiting drivers will impact earnings in the second quarter. Bonuses and other incentives to get drivers back on the road will reduce Uber's takes from the fares from about 20% this quarter. And Uber said it has approximately 3.5 million drivers and couriers on its platform, up 4% on quarter, but still 22% down on year. So that is quite a bit of a dip there. In addition to all of this, right, the Grab listing will be interesting to watch as well, because I have noticed on a few of the US-centric investing blogs that they're calling Uber, they're calling Grab a competitor to Uber in terms of an investing destination. But I think, Noel, you've made this case before, right? Are US or foreign investors really that interested in companies within the region outside of maybe Sea Limited, which has done so well over the last 1 year? I wonder if really Grab will take off in that same fashion.
Well, I think it's up to Grab to do its public relations, mm-hmm. right, to get the kind of valuation that it wants.
I think it's also interesting looking at these Uber numbers, particularly after we saw Lyft report earnings yesterday. And so Uber is expecting profitability on an adjusted EBITDA basis by the end of the year. Lyft is expecting it slightly sooner in the third quarter of this year. So they pulled forward their expectation of profitability by about 3 months. So that's going to be quite interesting, this ride-hailing delivery fight that we're seeing play out around the world. But right now, we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're going to be discussing the impact of MCO 3.0 on travel and tourism with Nigel Wong, Honorary Secretary General of MATA. Be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.